Okay, now, today you get to play with fire. So as soon as I shut up, you need to put on your goggles and keep them on your eyes the whole time. Don't forget to put them back in the box when you're done. We're doing a admittedly crude, but still a method of a technique called calorimetry today. Now, the metry part of that word indicates that it's a measurement of some sort. Calor is a Latin word that means heat. Calorimetry is measurement of energy content in a sample. It's, of course, the same root as in calorie. Calorie is a unit, though, a unit of energy. And most people think of food when they hear mention of calories. Calories don't necessarily have anything to do with food. It's simply a measurement of energy, and it happens to be that food contains energy. But so does a lot of non-food items. So you can measure the energy content of anything you want. It doesn't have to be a food. We're using mostly foods today, though. And that's the relevance to biology. That's why you eat, is to obtain energy. So there's different methods of calorimetry, but this method is about as crude as you can get, meaning that it's very much error involved. So don't expect your numbers to agree with each other if you compare them for the same foods. But also, especially, don't expect your answers to be very close to what a food label for whatever type of food you're doing will indicate is the energy content. You'll be way low. And that's because a lot of the energy that's in the food that's being released when you burn it escapes the process. What you're doing is trying to heat up water using the flame that the burning food produces, but of course not all of that energy goes into the water, right? For instance, you might hear it, you might see it. Those two things alone are energy in different forms. But by far, most of the energy that's wasted just goes into heating up the air rather than the water itself. So this would not be the way that a food scientist trying to figure out what the calorie content of foods would be for a label. They use a much more careful method of calorimetry called bomb calorimetry. Now that gets its name because it uses a little chamber made of stainless steel that kind of shaped like a bomb. You can screw off the lid to put your sample in, whatever it is. Really thick-walled stainless steel, so the explosion that occurs within it will be contained. It's not going to blow it apart. But the explosion is a good name for it because there are electrodes in this thing. Once you put your sample in and seal it, then you pump it full of several atmospheres of pure oxygen, so that when you do provide a spark with the electrodes, all that oxygen will be plenty to make it complete combustion. So it will be completely burned, like an explosion. But this bomb is completely submerged in a tank of water. And this is set up so that you know exactly how much water there is there, and exactly what the temperature is of the water before you start. Then you put the sample in and then do the explosion. And since it's submerged, and since it's not going to blow the bomb apart, the only place that energy can go to is into the water. And therefore, any temperature change you can measure, which you will because the temperature of the water will go up, if you measure it carefully, you can compute how much energy was released by the sample, and therefore how much energy was contained by that sample. You're doing the same thing, just with a lot of that energy being wasted into the air and so on. But this brings me to one of the many things that pissed me off which is calorie as a unit, or units, really. Because there are two calories, calorie and calorie, which you can't tell the difference when I just said those two. But you can when you spell them. There is calorie with a lowercase c and a completely different unit spelled exactly the same way but with a capital C. Just a foolish way of creating units, but someone thought it was a good idea. When we talk about a food calorie, like a candy bar has so many calories, that's the capital C. And it's actually 1,000 scientific calories, which are the lowercase c's. So a uppercase C calorie is really a kilocalorie, or kcal. And thankfully, they realized the foolishness of this, and now modern labels are starting, instead of saying calories with a capital C, they'll say kcals, kilocalories. But that brings up the question of what a scientific calorie is. I said it's a unit, but what is it defined as? Well, a calorie is the amount of energy required to raise the temperature of exactly 1 gram of water by 1 degree centigrade or 1 Kelvin. Same thing, same amount of temperature increase. Now, specifically, it's the amount of energy required to raise it at 1 atmosphere of pressure from 14.5 centigrade to 15.5 centigrade, because it does slightly depend on what the temperature is at the beginning as to how much energy it requires. But within our range, it's pretty much consistent. It has to be pure water, and it has to be exactly a gram of water. But there's a correspondent, grams, of course, is mass, right? There's a correspondence based on water between gram and milliliter. Milliliter is volume, which is, a milliliter is 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter. But if it's pure water that you have filling up 1 milliliter, then that will be exactly 1 gram of water. As long as you know it's pure water, a gram of mass equals 1 milliliter of volume, or 1 cubic centimeter. Same thing. All right? So a calorie is enough energy to raise a milliliter of water 1 degree, 1 centigrade degree, 1 Kelvin. That means 1 food calorie, which doesn't seem like much when we talk about it in terms of food, which is actually one kilocalorie, that's enough energy to raise 1,000 milliliters, or a whole liter of water by a degree, which is a lot of energy, right? Because of the high specific heat capacity of water we've talked about earlier. Or you could also think about it as a single kilocalorie, 1 food calorie, equaling the amount of energy required to raise 1 milliliter of water 1,000 degrees. Same thing, right? That's a lot of energy, especially when you consider that we typically rate an adult human daily diet at 2,000 calories, right? 2,000 food calories, which is really 2,000 kilocalories, which is really 2 million calories. So the amount of food that you eat in one day is really 2 million calories, which is enough to raise 2 million milliliters of water by a degree, or raise 1 milliliter by 2 million degrees. That's a lot of energy. So the whole thing that you're doing is really identical to bomb calorimetry, just not as careful. You're just losing a bunch of heat. But you're still basing it on the fact that you have to start out with pure water. You have to know how much water is there, because if you double the amount of water, it's only going to raise the temperature half as much, right, for the same amount of energy. You have to know how much water you have. You have to have a careful measurement of the initial temperature and the final temperature. And you also have to have a careful measurement of how much food you started with, or sample, and how much sample you ended up with, because in this method, it's not going to completely burn. You're going to have stuff left over after the flame goes out. But what's left over, you can't include that in your calculation, right? You want to include only what burned. What happens to the food that gets burned, by the way? Where is it now? Just like in your bodies, it becomes CO2 and water. The stuff that you see as ash, that or whatever it is that drips off of it, that is unburned sample. So I'm bringing this up because you need to be careful. This is an easy exercise, and it won't take you the whole time once you get started. But you want to be careful, as even though it's a crude method, you want to get as good a result as possible, including using the thermometers. When you put your test tubes in the bottom clamp, you of course want to make sure that the thermometer bulb is completely submerged, but you also, and the difficult part, is that you want to make sure that the bulb is not actually touching the glass of the tube. You want it to be just in the water itself. Otherwise, you'll get an artificially high temperature because it'll be measuring the glass that you have the flame directly on rather than the water itself. Okay, so you might have to, each time you change tubes, fiddle with it a bit to make that right. That's one thing you should be careful about. Another is that you should not assume that the starting temperature of water is always going to be the same, since it's always coming from the same sink. Don't do that. Get a beginning temperature carefully for each sample before you start. And by carefully, I mean make sure that the thermometer has stopped moving, whether downward or upward. All right, and the same for the final temperature. Just because your food has gone out doesn't mean that the temperature has stopped rising. So keep an eye on the thermometer after your flame goes out, or after you blow it out in some cases, and take the final temperature as being however high it gets before it starts to go down again. Now, another thing about taking the temperature is that the book tells you not to let the water get above 80 degrees. And that's what I meant by blowing it out rather than letting it go out. And that's because if you start heating water, you're delivering heat to the water, of course it's going to get higher and higher temp, right? But it's eventually going to get to boiling point. And when you start boiling water, it does not get any hotter. You're adding more and more heat, but that heat is just going into transforming more and more water from liquid to gas. It's not making the water any hotter. It's staying at boiling point until it's all gone. Well, you don't want any part of that plateau because you want a final temperature and a beginning temperature, right, while it's changing. So you don't want to get near this plateau, and 80 degrees is close enough. This is why you can't just keep using the same water, even though nothing happens to the water, you're just heating it. You don't want to start sample two with already warm water because you won't have enough headroom, right? You want to have as much headroom as possible before you have to blow it out. But a couple of these samples have so much energy in them that you'll have to blow it out because otherwise it'll just go straight up to boiling. Don't let that happen. Okay, now it's okay that it doesn't burn completely, whether it goes out by itself or whether you blow it out, because you're going to account for that with careful weighing. So this is the other important part. First of all, when you're weighing these things, don't use the paper. Use foil pieces. Use a different foil piece for each sample. Now, ordinarily, you would want to zero your scale before you put the weighing paper down, right? Or the foil. That's not what you want to do here. You want to zero the scale with nothing on it, then put the foil on it and the food, or the sample, and get a total combined sample and foil weight as your beginning, and then take that particular piece of foil with you, because every foil piece is different, and put it on the base of your ring stand to catch anything that falls from your sample, because some will drip, others will just fall, pieces will fall off. Well, that's going to stick to that foil, some of it is, and you need to figure out how much is left over that didn't burn, right? If it sticks to the foil, there's no way you can completely get it off the foil to take a final measurement, which means your final measurement has to include the foil as well. But you don't want the foil mass to be part of your measurement. That's why you include it in the beginning and in the end. And when you subtract final from initial, it will subtract out the foil. Plus, it will subtract out any food that actually turned into CO2, which is the amount that you want. Does that make sense? So even though you're starting with a certain mass of food, only some of it will burn, and only that amount that you calculate has burned has contained that amount of energy that you compute based on the energy the temperature change of the water. That's the whole idea. So if you're careful with all of that, it's easy to do. You can get through it pretty quickly. And really, in terms of being in this room, all you really have to do is get your raw data and clean up. If you want to hang around and do your calculations here, that's fine too, but you don't really have to. You can do your calculations even at home if you want. No. If you have any questions about the calculations, let me know, certainly. I'm just saying, raw. You can't leave before you get your raw data. Okay, any questions on any of that? In that case, man, it seemed like there was one other thing I wanted to say, but if so, I'll let you know.